This is Second Look, only on 103.3 WZND. Here to take a second look at the stories the WZND Newsroom has covered this week. Investigative reporting from the award-winning WZND News Team, here for you. Unbiased, engaging, and comprehensive. Second Look starts now.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Second Look, the show where we take an in-depth second look at last week's stories. I'm Jaden Cohn.
And I'm Joey Delahunty. Today we will be checking in with the Bloomington City Council, discussing the recent anti-Semitic flyers in downtown Bloomington, hearing about Heartland's new EV program, and looking at what's next for ISU volleyball. On Monday, the City of Bloomington released a statement regarding the anti-Semitic flyers that were hung on the doors and windows of downtown Bloomington. Bloomington Mayor Mboka Mwabwe said that this hateful rhetoric has no place in our community. I spoke with Officer Bryce Jansen from the Bloomington Police Department to discuss what they are doing to address the situation. Just get right off the bat, obviously we're here to talk about the anti-Semitic posters that were found around downtown Bloomington this past weekend.
Yeah.
Can you catch me up? What do we know so far?
So we were notified, well, somebody saw the information on social media that there were some flyers downtown, and they were posted on some buildings, businesses, that type of thing, and they had been removed from those locations. So once we heard about this, we went and sent an officer downtown to start investigating and trying to determine what had happened. There never were any flyers, the original flyers given to us. They had all been taken down before our arrival. So we sent an officer downtown to interview some business owners and try to determine what had occurred before our arrival.
So y'all are investigating what happened. Has a crime seemingly been committed? Like, what's the end goal of this investigation?
So the main goal was to determine, you know, what exactly happened. And yes, was there a crime that happened? And at this time, it does not appear that a criminal offense had occurred. So the main thing was just kind of a fact-finding mission, trying to determine, you know, were these posted on buildings? What did the flyers say? You know, were there any threats in there, that type of thing? And try to make sure, you know, a crime was not committed.
Did it seem like anyone in particular was targeted by these?
I am not aware as far as if any individuals were targeted.
Do you have any idea why this happened when it did? Like, was there something that changed, or was it just it happened now?
Yeah, I am not aware of, you know, a correlation between that and any, you know, events that are happening right now or anything like that, or what prompted this individual to post those flyers.
Right. So obviously the mayor put out a statement. A lot of people are concerned. They don't want to have this sort of sentiment floating around their community. What should people who are concerned about this do?
I mean, the main thing is, like we're doing right now, have dialogue about it. You know, let people know that this is, you know, not okay. Obviously, people have the right to the freedom of speech, and we're not going to intrude on that by any means. But basically, have an open dialogue and make sure people know your feelings on things like this when it occurs. And, you know, as the mayor said, this, you know, isn't exactly something that we want in our community. But at the same time, hate speech is protected speech. There's nothing the police department, you know, can do in this particular case, with it being the flyers and the flyers alone. If another crime had occurred, you know, at the same time, then yes, then it can become a hate crime or something of that nature.
So is there any further investigation from the police department, or have y'all sort of wrapped up, no crime was committed, just sort of found the facts?
Spoke with the officer investigating it earlier today. It sounds like they still had a couple more businesses to speak with downtown, and just in order to confirm that, you know, a crime did not occur. So I don't believe it's completely finished at this time, but as of now, I'm not aware of, you know, a crime being discovered while this was being investigated.
The BPD is continuing its efforts to look for the cause behind the poster, though they don't seem to have any suspects.
The Bloomington City Council is facing new problems, including the ongoing housing crisis, the open spot on the council, and more. To get a better look at what the council has planned for the future, WZND's Caitlin Wittes sat down with Councilman Cody Hendricks.
What are some of those issues or initiatives that the council focuses on?
Yeah, so currently, one of the big ones, obviously, is dealing with housing. You know, that's the big topic for everybody across the nation, but also here in the region and in the city. So some of the things that we have looked at here recently at our last Committee of the Whole, which is the meeting in which we kind of hear presentations or future proposals to take action on revolved around some incentives that we're looking at from a city perspective that might help increase housing. So we're looking at, are there ways that maybe for a short time period, we're looking at 2 years right now, are there ways that we can reduce some of the city fees that we typically have for a host of different services that the city might provide, or hooking on to different sewer lines and things? You know, are there ways that we can waive those fees that might encourage developers because we're helping to decrease those costs? And so that should be coming back before us hopefully soon. That's something that I very, very strongly support. I mean, I think it's going to be one of the many drops in the bucket that we're going to have to make if we want to see some real solutions or outcomes in that area. Another issue that we're dealing with right now is we have an opening on the city council in Ward 2, which is primarily your south western side of Bloomington, if I'm remembering my lines right. So we had a alderperson there, Donna Bolin, who resigned, and so we need to appoint somebody. The mayor ultimately gets to put forward that name, but we as the council get to vote to approve or deny that person. So we've been going through resumes and talking with individuals to try to find, you know, some good candidates, and then from that, the hope is that the mayor will take some of our advice and decide on which one he thinks should be brought forward. So I think our plan is to possibly vote on that on Monday, and so we'd be back to having a full council, which, you know, is good for the city and good for the Ward 2 residents as well.
Okay, great. And then how does the council tend to make changes regarding these issues?
So, you know, we as a council, primarily we as council members kind of speak with one another, and we also relay information to the city manager. Our city manager has been very good about hearing, different voices from us, from the community. And really what they do is they try to take those different voices and ideas, see if they can boil them together kind of as best they can, and then bring policies or initiatives back before the council for us to either debate some more, discuss some more, and then ultimately, you know, make that final approval or that final vote to try to see it become reality.
All right. And then when does the council meet and how often?
So we meet 3 times a month. It's always on the second, third, and fourth Monday. The second and fourth Monday are regular meetings where we take action and actually vote on things. The third Monday of the month is what we call the Committee of the Whole, which is where we just typically hear different presentations from either the community or from the city itself, or they might be giving us a presentation on a future proposal they're going to bring forward to get us thinking about it and discussing it now. And so at those meetings, we don't take a vote or take any action. Those meetings always occur at 6 p.m. and they take place on the fourth floor of the Government Center, which is downtown at Front and East Street, which is next to Rosie's or across the street kind of from the parking lot for Epiphany, if you know where that's at.
All right. And then do you have any other important information that you think would be beneficial to share?
The only other thing is that, you know, local elections for the council and for the mayor's position come up on April 1st. Early voting starts on February 20th, so just making the community aware of that election.
Bloomington City Council will be voting at tomorrow's meeting to fill the opening spot in their ranks. We're going to take a quick break here on A Second Look, but we've got some great stories you don't want to miss. Keep it here on 103.3 WZND.
You're listening to Second Look, only on WZND.
Welcome back to Second Look on WZND. In case you missed it so far, we've talked about Bloomington's anti-Semitic poster problem and the City Council's recent activities.
Heartland Community College is leading the charge on new electric vehicle program. With Rivian in town and the current general growth of electric vehicles, Heartland is hoping to put its students a step ahead. Gigi Escobedo from the newsroom sat down with Heartland's Dean of Career and Technical Education, Adam Campbell, to learn more.
Heartland Community College has introduced a new EV certification program. What I really wanted to do was just talk to someone about what this program will consist of and kind of like how it got started and the impact of it. So my first question for you is, what is this new EV certification program and what will it consist of?
Yeah, so the certificate itself is called the Energy Systems Charging Infrastructure Technician Program. Okay. So the title is actually longer than what the program seems, because it's only a 7-credit-hour certificate. So it's not a lot of classes. It only consists of 2 3-credit-hour courses and then an OSHA course, a 1-credit-hour OSHA course. But really what we're trying to do is build on our burgeoning electric vehicle energy storage systems, our energy systems coursework that we have. As you know, Heartland, we're one of the very first in the state to have a fully electric vehicle program. And I mean, we have, actually, I think we were the first in the state. Don't quote this one, because this one may not be right. But we were certainly one of the first in the country to have a EV-only program. So Heartland did not have an existing automotive program. So we started with electric vehicles and electric vehicle technology. So this just seems, in year 4 of that EV program, just seems like the natural progression as we're moving toward energy storage systems. We're looking at how can we position Illinois, central Illinois and Illinois at large, how can we position the state to handle some of those infrastructure issues? You know, as we have a dearth of electric vehicles that are starting to show up on the road and a commitment from the governor to see 1 million electric vehicles on the road, how can we support that with the charging infrastructure? How do we train people to go out and install, repair, maintain these charging stations that are out there? So that's really the genesis of the program. It just seems like it's a natural flow from where we've been going over the last few years.
How did this electrical vehicle program get started? And why did Heartland feel that this new program needed to be implemented?
That's a great question. So in full disclosure, the program actually predates me. I've been with the college about 3.5 years.
Okay.
So it was in process before, but I think Heartland recognized push from the state and from Governor Pritzker that this is an emerging technology, something that needed to be intentional. And so I guess one way to put it is that we didn't have an existing automotive program that we could shoehorn EV technology into. So this is an EV-only program. So I feel like that's kind of unique. Going back to my beginnings of it, a lot of it was funded through a state grant. We have a building here on campus that was funded through a state grant that allowed us to build out the program. And then we've been able to maintain a very positive relationship with Rivian. They're only a few miles away from us. So we had an obvious need in the immediate vicinity and really worked to fill that need with technicians, with people that are familiar with the electric vehicle technology, and that really specifically worked in that discipline.
So when talking about Heartland Community College, as well as like the community around it overall in Bloomington Normal, what do you think that this EV program will do for like the community around Heartland?
Yeah, so I think number one, it provides us a great pipeline to Rivian, individuals who are very familiar with it, and Rivian being one of, if not the largest manufacturing employer in the state of Illinois. They certainly need a lot of folks coming in with some background in the technology. But beyond that, the technology is going to become more prevalent down the road. And again, whether that's through electric vehicles or energy storage systems, through solars, through wind, what have you, the technology in and of itself is becoming more popular and integrated throughout traditional disciplines and areas. We're seeing a lot of electrification in ag. We're seeing high technology being used in those applications. It's just going out digging in the dirt anymore, there's computers. In the automotive area, I've heard it from technicians in the field that say the first tool that new mechanics reach for nowadays is their computer. So being in a position where we can introduce this technology to the public, and again, provide a pipeline and a service to Rivian and a lot of Tesla. We have the Tesla dealership here in town. So being able to provide that pipeline to them, it's a really valuable role, I think, that we play.
Yeah, and for sure, with that progression of, you know, new technology and everything, it's definitely really important for, like, the evolving car community around us. My last question to you is, students are going to be now taking this new program. Why did Heartland kind of feel that it was important for students to have this new program implemented so that this could be a new career path or career choice for someone?
For one, almost all of our programming stacks. So while this might be an independent 7-credit-hour certificate, but you can come to it. Within one semester, they get this, they walk out the door, they can come back and build that into a larger certificate. They can build that into a 2-year associate's degree program. And for many students, this is just step one. They're going to continue to return to education. They're going to continue to build their skills. And it's an easy on-ramp for a lot of students. Our traditional profile in the career and tech ed field is our students maybe tend to be a little older, may have been out of school for a little bit, maybe second career, what have you. It's a great on-ramp for somebody who wants to get into the EV and the energy storage system field. Beyond that, here at Harlan, our name means something. It's got a value to it. So when we certificate and say to the student, you have earned this credential from Heartland, that it has a lot of value for them, that it's portable for them within the industry, and that as employers look at our programming and they see that Heartland was the first, that we've invested a lot of time and energy and resources into building out this program, and they look at the quality of our faculty. Our faculty are top-notch, and so having a student come out and say, I have this certificate from this institution, carries a lot of weight, I think.
For more on this new program, you can check out the full story on WZND.com.
Last weekend, the Bloomington Center for the Performing Arts hosted a Valentine's Day dance for the community, open to couples and individuals alike, with drinks and live music. Bloomington often held dances like this before the COVID-19 pandemic and decided to bring them back in a similar fashion due to public demand.
Governor J.B. Pritzker recently announced a signed bill that will lower the Illinois residency requirement for petitioning a name change and reduce fees, as well as repealing the requirement to publish a public announcement of the name change, which can often be costly. The new bill is meant to strengthen protections for transgender people and human trafficking victims, as well as other vulnerable populations interested in changing their names.
This past week, the ISU quad was filled with students protesting in support of immigrants and against the recent ICE raids. Taking place on Wednesday and Thursday afternoon, the protests were attended by over 100 students each day. These protests also come after the McLean County Sheriff's Office put out a statement that while they wouldn't be assisting in raiding schools, they would otherwise be assisting the federal government in immigration enforcement.
The Normal Theater will be running a new film series on Black History Month in collaboration with ISU's African American Studies program. The showings will start in February and run into March, with all films and performances in the series being free to the public.
ISU sports were back in action this week. The women's basketball team took down Missouri State 66-55 last Sunday. Then on Friday, despite four Redbirds reaching double digits in points, they fell 79-74 in a rematch with the Drake Bulldogs. The Redbirds will be back in action today at 2 p.m. against Northern Iowa.
The softball team opened its 2025 season at the USF Rawlings Invitational. The Redbirds started the season off strong with a 2-1 extra innings win over the University of Delaware on Friday. Momentum slowed down for the remainder of the invite as they lost 5-3 to South Florida, 2-1 to Georgia Southern, and 10-2 to number 2 ranked Florida. Yesterday, the Redbirds were shut out by Michigan's 4 runs to conclude the Invitational. The team looks to get back in the win column on Thursday as they head to Mexico for the Puerto Vallarta Challenge to take on BYU.
The men's tennis team fell to UI Indy 5-2 in Friday's match. The Redbirds pulled away with on singles match and a doubles match victory. The women's tennis team were not successful and fell 4-0 to Fordham on Friday. Today, the men's team takes on New Mexico State and Tulsa, while the women's team takes on St. John's.
The men's basketball team put out the flames of UIC on Wednesday, in part of a career high of 31 points from Chase Walker and 17 from Jordan Davis, the Redbirds pulled away with an 81-79 victory. However, in yesterday's game against Northern Iowa, the Redbirds' three-game win streak came to an end with a 68-65 loss to the Panthers. Johnny Kinzinger was the only Redbird to reach double figures with 16 points.
The swimming and diving team looks to wrap up its invite at UIC today, and the gymnastics team came away with a second-place finish at the Townsend Quad Meet with 194 points.
It may be the off-season for ISU volleyball, but the future looks bright for the team. The team announced the addition of 3 new recruits to join the nest next fall. I spoke with Ella Craggs on why she chose to commit to Illinois State.
So my first question for you is, why did you choose to come to Illinois State?
So for me, it was kind of, I knew I wanted to go there, like, immediately when I started just connecting with the coaches over the phone, and then we like would continue to have conversation, and then I finally scheduled my visit, and then even like before I even saw the campus, I really knew I wanted to go there, and then just sold it for me, like getting to go on my official visit. And I definitely think the coaches had a big part of my decision, and all the facilities and just everything that Illinois State has to offer.
And then when you visited the campus, was there something that stood out to you?
I think just like how like well respected and how like they, how much they value like the athletes at ISU is something that really stuck out to me.
Were you able to meet some of the other players here?
Yeah, I was able to meet a few of them. I think some of them are graduated now, but yeah, I was able to meet some players.
And then I was reading, doing a little research, and then I found out that you and Abby Rex sort of have a chemistry and history together. Can you talk a little about that?
Yeah, so we went to high school together. We live in the same town in Michigan, and we had a really good relationship like throughout high school playing together, and then Abby's younger sisters as well are in my grade, so I'm super close with them, and I think it also was super nice when Abby transferred to Illinois State, because then it was, I kind of knew someone in the program.
Yeah. Do you think that her transferring here was a factor in committing here?
Yeah, it definitely gave me, like, a little bit a better look into the program, like, knowing someone super well that has played for the coaches. Oh, yeah.
And what's your relationship sort of with Abby? Since you already have chemistry, what's it like on the court, off the court?
Off the court, obviously, we're super close. We're pretty good friends. We hang out with me and her sisters. And then on the court, I think we both really respected each other when we played together in high school. And so just looking forward to doing that again in college.
And then were you able to meet any of the other recruits that are in the same class as you?
Yeah, I was able to meet both of them this past year at the camps at Illinois State, and I got to get to know them a little bit.
And what are your thoughts on your interaction with them?
I mean, yeah, they were both super nice. I'm really excited to get the opportunity to play with them and live with them, so I'm super excited. Especially, I think their volleyball skills are not only great, but also their personalities. So.
Mm-hmm. And then I also read that you're coming off a high school championship, so can you talk a little bit about how your season went and some of the emotions that you were going through during this season?
Yeah, I mean, it was just an incredible season for our entire team and our whole program. It was the first time our school has ever won a state championship, and I think the main reason for that was just like our seniors really led by example, and we all really wanted it so badly, and we were all 100% in on having the same goal, and our coach also did a great job of leading us to the state championship, and I think it just felt super accomplishing when we finally did make it to the state championship match and ultimately winning it.
And then since you're a setter, you're sort of like the captain of the offense, how do you think your game translates to like being that leadership role?
Yeah, I mean, always, it's always been in volleyball, like the setter is kind of the leader of the team and like the captain, so I think that I really just take that role with like full responsibility, and I try my best to be a good example on and off the court and lead my teammates by example, and always like having good communication with my teammates and my coaches.
Yeah. And then what are some of your goals that you have for yourself coming to your freshman season?
I think, honestly, just getting to know the team really well and just enjoying my time there. And obviously, playing is obviously a goal that I would have to come in and play right away, but I'm just super excited to get started there and start training. I think that playing at a high-level high school and as well in club, getting to play against, like, the best kids in the country and in my state has definitely prepared me for the next level playing in college. And I think that it's something that not a lot of people get to say they have that experience. So I think that it definitely gives me a lot of preparation and a leg up.
Do you think you're going to face any challenges?
Yeah, I feel like I've never faced anything too crazy. Like, I've never had super bad injuries, but I think that's definitely something that is could maybe be in my future, and I feel like every athlete at some point in their life has to go through challenges and struggles, so I feel like that's just something that I'm ready to face.
Mm-hmm. And then how many years have you been playing volleyball?
I think I've been playing volleyball since I was in, like, second grade, so, like, probably 10 years now. Pretty much my whole life is all I've remembered, yeah.
How did you get involved?
My mom played volleyball when she was growing up, and then she played volleyball in college as well, so I feel like she got me kind of involved in the sport right away, and then I just kind of fell in love with her right away.
And then what's been the biggest lesson out of all that playing time that you can take away from playing volleyball?
I would say, honestly, just enjoying, like, the time that I have, like, with my teammates and my coaches, because, and just having fun. I feel like sometimes I take it too seriously, or I'm just, like, not having fun, so kind of just to, like, take it all in, have fun, play with my teammates, and just enjoy my time while I'm still able to play the sport.
Crags is fresh off a high school state championship with Northville High School in Michigan and had over 3,000 career assists in 3 years at the varsity level. Crags will join forces with Devin Scholes and Nikayla Rogers as the freshman class of 2029.
Thank you so much for listening to this week's episode of Second Look. Today we looked at the response to anti-Semitism in Bloomington, new actions from the City Council, Heartland's new electric vehicle program, and the future of ISU volleyball. For Second Look, I'm Joey Delahunty.
And I'm Jaden Cohn. And right before we go, Joey, I have a quick question. Who do you think is going to win the big game?
I mean, I feel like it's going to be the Chiefs. I know a lot of people don't want it to be the Chiefs because they're sort of sick of the Chiefs, but I think it'd be cool. I think it'd be the cool making history aspect of it. And, like, come on, they just did it twice. They're not going to beat them.
Right. I think the whole season, Patrick Mahomes and the Chiefs have just been dominant all season long. If you were here listening to my newscast on Friday, you heard my prediction of the Eagles on Friday, but I think Patrick Mahomes is going to bring the Chiefs to a victory on this one.
I think the upset would be interesting. I'd like to see it.
Yeah, definitely. But we'll see what happens, and we will catch you all next week on Sunday, same time, same place, noon on WZND. This was Second Look.
This has been WZND's Second Look. Catch more WZND in-depth news every Sunday at noon with WZND's Bird's Eye View and Second Look. For more WZND news, find us online at WZND.com.